welcome to another edition of the Narrative First Podcast, the weekly podcast where story is always king. I am your host, Jim Hull, the voice of Narrative First, and this is episode number 17, Defining the Feeling of Tension in Your Story. Welcome back, everyone. I hope you all had a great weekend. I had the greatest weekend of my life. After 35 years, I finally got to see my favorite band in concert, Journey. I finally got to see Neil Sean play guitar, Steve Smith play drums, and Jonathan Cain on keyboard. It was the greatest experience of my life, and I'll have more on that later on in the show. But first, follow-up. Last week's article on predicting who will listen to your story created quite a little bit of a stir there, which it usually does, which is why I like to write about it, because people get all worked up about what it is I'm not saying, because they see something in there that I didn't actually put down. If you haven't listened to last week's podcast, it was all about the audience appreciation of reach, which, you know, most of Dramatica is all about the objective story points in your story. And there are four story points, which are kind of a combination of eight of those story points. Each one has two story points per. And you put those together and you can actually kind of predict how your audience will feel and who will actually show up to your story. And last week was all about you combine the main character's problem-solving style with the story limit. And the problem-solving style originally was called Mental Sex when Dramatica first came out in 93 and 94. And, you know, you can search for Mental Sex, or actually Mental Relativity online, and you'll be able to read a whole bunch of stuff from Melanie. She's one of the Dramatica co-creators, about the concept of mental sex and how that, you know, eventually led up to the creation of Dramatica. I mean, the reason why Dramatica is able to predict the act order in different through lines is based on this idea of mental sex, of the difference between the linear thinking mind and the holistic thinking mind. Well, in the original concept of Dramatica, mental sex, it was either male or female. So the story mind that you were creating was either a male story mind or a female story mind. And it was based on either a space-based operating system, and that doesn't mean outer space, but it means actually like spatial, a spatial-based operating system, or a time-based operating system. And the idea is that linear thinkers sit on space, you know, they stand on space as their reference point to be able to look out at everything else, and holistic thinkers sit on time to be able to look at everything else. And you put the two together, and you're able to actually, you know, the two of you together can defeat the entire world because you both see each other's blind spots. And that's why, you know, you pick your soulmate as somebody who covers up all your blind spots and you cover up all theirs and you guys live happily ever after. But the problem with it is people get all worked up because of the concept of, well, do men and women think differently? And I used to get the same, I didn't know I was having the same problem, but I got the same kind of blowback when I taught story at CalArts. I taught there for 7 years, and I, for the most part, people understood, but I just found out last year one of my students threw me under the bus saying that what I was teaching was complete BS, although she actually used the entire word, very naughty word, to describe what I was teaching. And I think, you know, mainly because she probably wasn't listening too closely, because there were several others in the class who actually understood what I was saying, and that the idea that mental sex only represents a quarter of the psychological makeup of the mind, you know, so with everything in Dramatica, you know, everything happens in fours, and so, you know, you have the quad, and so one of those is the mental sex, that's the preconscious or the impulsive responses. If you look in Dramatica under fixed attitude, which is what used to be called mind, you have the four levels of the mind, which is memory, preconscious, subconscious, and conscious. Now it's memories, impulsive responses, innermost desires, and contemplations, respectively. Mental sex sits in that impulsive responses in that preconscious area, and it's kind of like your operating system. I used to joke it's like kind of the difference between a Mac or Windows, you know, and all those commercials with, you know, I'm a PC, I'm a Mac. It's the same kind of idea. So they both can do the same thing, they just do it differently depending on the operating system. But you can have somebody who is a, you know, linear space-based operating system, spatial-based operating system in the preconscious, but the other three areas, their memories, their innermost desires, you know, their ego, and their contemplations can be all holistic, and you'll have somebody who's predominantly holistic, and that would perfectly describe me, which is hilarious to me then when I get called sexist, or that the stuff I write is tired sexist BS. That was the email from last week, because when I'm referring to linear thinkers and, you know, how they don't understand how holistic people think and how they don't like films like Moulin Rouge or, you know, any of those other films that feature a holistic main character, I'm not talking about myself. I'm talking about people that I run into, because for me, time lock stories are not exactly the most interesting stories in the world. They seem very simple to me because time is malleable. It's fluid. I mean, most of my thinking is geared more towards holistic thinking, which is why I'm able to write all the different articles that I'm able to write and be able to balance linear and holistic thinking, because I was raised in a predominantly holistic environment, which is, you know, that's great, because then that balances out the linear. You know, when I say these things like, just don't try to make them sit through High Noon, 3:10 to Yuma, or Armageddon, they will likely despise you until you find a way to balance out their annoyance with you. That was from last week's article. You know, when I say them, I'm not saying women, I'm saying holistic thinkers. Of course, anyone who has an issue with sexism, or they've been conditioned to think a certain way, they're going to actually project their own insecurities and own issues onto that and see women instead of the word them. I have an interesting, I'll link to the blog post that I put up today where I kind of defended my position once again, which is funny because it seems like it's every year. Last year it was August 31st that I found that lovely article from one of my former students on a very popular animation blog, which was great to read. It's great, you know, I put in all that time and effort to be labeled sexist. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes with the post today about defending myself. And you can read it and hopefully understand better what it is that we're talking about. I mean, one person wrote to me and their single line was, "I don't understand a thing you're talking about," which is hilarious because I get a handful more emails of people who actually love the article and are so excited by it and want to change their story in order to be linear option locked to get the greatest audience. So it's just funny that the people that don't take the time to actually think it through and actually hear what it is that Melanie and Chris were talking about when they came up with Mental Sex and Dramatica. It's hilarious. Like, people won't even take the time to understand it. It's like, you know, the Earth isn't the center of the universe, and everybody's like, "Oh no, it's not the center of the universe. What are you talking about? That can't be." And they freak out, and they have to burn people at the stake and wait hundreds of years before they allow people to understand that, yes, Jupiter and Saturn go around the sun, and so do we. Actually, you know what? I'll just have Melanie explain it.
So the idea is that the balance within the single individual statistically over the population is no longer a double bell curve, but they're beginning to merge in the center, so that both men and women are having exactly the same kind of mental sex balance. The two extremes still exist within us, but because we are not fully committed to one or the other by the doping that occurs to the brain before birth that determines the locks in the level of bias to one or the other. Again,
how are we not slave to that as much?
We aren't, because as we begin to have people practicing mental techniques of being more balanced in the middle, because it makes one more efficient. The very practice of it, just like using typing and changes fingers in the next generation, using mind a certain way changes thinking in the next generation. So balance is shifting from one way of from having a double bell curve to having more individuals born with a balance mixed between the two.
So that was recorded last week. I had lunch with Melanie. It's one of the perks of being so invested into Dramatica. You actually get to have lunch with one of the most brilliant people in the world and actually pick her brain for answers to narrative and how it all works out. You know, we went on much longer after that, and hopefully I'll be able to type it up and put it on the site. So be sure to check out that post where you can learn all about the main character's problem-solving style and what that means for story. Another really thing I just want to drop in here real quick, which I discovered today, was Chris Huntley, the other half of Dramatica. He had a great post, which spurred some creativity in me today, about what it would be like. Somebody asked, you know, it's pretty clear how a linear thinking assassin would work, but they wondered how a holistic assassin would work, what they would do. And he gives a great explanation that a holistic assassin might determine pressure points based on the target's relationships with others that, when pushed, may trigger rebalancing in one or more of those relationships in such a way that circumstances cause one of those relationships to go bad and lead to the target's death, either by suicide or murder by another party. Now, see, that's a cool story. That's a different story. That's not Jason Bourne. That's something else. Nobody's come up with that yet. Or maybe they haven't. I'm just not aware of it. So I kind of went off that and came up with some ideas of what a holistic assassin might actually do. I also put up a Throughline Thursdays of Sideways last week. You know, I went ahead and posted the full analysis of the film last week on Dramatica.com, and so I figured might as well just make that the Throughline Thursdays. So you'll find that in the show notes as well. But again, I had no movie this week, no analysis, because Journey. So this week's topic is about defining the feel of tension in your story. And what I'm going to do is, over the next couple weeks, is go through the four audience appreciations and give examples of films and give you a better idea of these story points, because they're not really covered too well in the theory book or in the software. They're kind of alluded to, and as we'll see, you know, I think there's some mistakes here and there with them, which makes it even more complicated and perhaps something you're just not even bothered with. And so my hope is that after, you know, listening to these podcasts, reading the articles, you'll have a better idea of what these terms mean and be able to use them in your own stories. And it's interesting, like with anything in Dramatica, everything's based on fours, everything's based on the quad, right? Because, you know, we see the world the way we think, which is why mass, energy, space, and time sync up with knowledge, thought, ability, and desire. Wow, I can't believe I almost forgot it there. Yeah, so knowledge is the mass of the mind, you know, thought is the energy of the mind, and then ability and desire, they're both the space and time of the mind, which is probably a little more difficult for you to conceive of, and you can learn more about that online if you want to, or I'll describe it sometime in the future. But essentially, yeah, so we always see four in everything, and so for the audience appreciation, there's actually four different appreciations, and this week we're going to talk about essence. So the essence of story is described as the primary dramatic feel of a story, which is exactly what the topic of this week's conversation is. And it's described as this in the Dramatica theory book. A story can be appreciated as the interaction of dynamics that converge at the climax. From this point of view, the feel of the dramatic tension can be defined. Dramatic tension is created between the direction the main character is growing compared to the author's value judgment of that growth. And it's funny because reading this through again, interaction of dynamics that converge at the climax, I don't think that's necessarily correct. And I'll get into why I think that, and why that kind of creates a confusion in just a bit. But first, those two story points that it's actually addressing, the main character growth and the story judgment. For those of you who don't know, the main character growth describes basically the main character's arc. You know, you have the main character resolve and the main character growth. And like everything with Dramatica, just like there's quads, every quad shows both the states and processes of things, right? You know, you have situation and mind, which are problems that are states, and then you have physics and psychology, or activities and manners of thinking, which describe processes. And so right there, that quad describes both state and process. So when it comes to the character arc, you have state and process. Resolve is the state, you know, your change or steadfast. Or I would prefer changed, which is another thing I hope can be fixed sometime. But, you know, whether or not their paradigm at the end, whether that state, that switch has flipped. Are they a changed paradigm main character, or have they retained their point of view on how you should approach the world and remain steadfast? The second part of that, the process, is covered by the main character growth, which, you know, I never really understood until about 5 or 6 years ago. But you put those two together, and that's how you get character arc, what most people would consider character arc. And so when people see change in a main character and they say, well, you know, a main character, it's a change, what they're really talking about is the main character has to grow. I mean, so that's great. Okay, they need to grow, but actually Dramatica splits it off into two different directions. Do they grow by growing into something, or do they grow by growing out of something? And it may seem like six of one, half a dozen of the other, but really it defines the direction of personal development for that central character. And it the way it works is depending on what the main character is dealing with compared to what the overall story is dealing with will determine what kind of direction they have to go. So if the main character needs to grow into something, their growth is said to be start, and if they need to grow out of something, their growth is said to be stop. The second part of that is the story judgment, and this is where the author passes judgment on all the effort to kind of solve the problem in the story. Did everything work out and it was a good thing, or was it a bad thing trying to work that through? And usually you see this in the main character's personal issues. You know, they typically start a story with some kind of angst, some kind of personal issue, baggage from something, and if they're able to work it through, then that's a good judgment. You know, they're working through the problems, they're able to get rid of that baggage, and that's a good thing. If they're not, you know, silence of the lambs, or the lambs still crying or screaming, then yeah, that's a bad thing. And it can also be applied to the story as a whole, like to every character within a story. You know, did they all, as a general bulk, did they all end up in a better place, you know, like four weddings and a funeral? Or was everybody just, like, miserable, and it was just a really bad thing, like Hamlet or something like that? So the problem with essence and the dramatic tension is the semantic value that Chris and Melanie assigned to it. And the semantic value is the options for essence. And they decided to go with either positive feel or negative feel. Which you read that and you think, oh, so my story either has a positive feeling or it has a negative feeling. And they make it even worse when in the definition they say, you know, some films are uppers and some films are downers. So you think, okay, well, if my story says negative feel, I'm writing a downer story and maybe I don't want to do that. Or maybe I just want to write upper films and that's what it is. The problem is that means Star Wars and Notting Hill are negative downer films, which doesn't sound right at all. And it means The Omen and Romeo and Juliet are positive, uplifting films. And that is ludicrous. Doesn't even make any sense at all. And even Hamlet, right? Hamlet, where everybody's miserable, that's supposed to be a positive feel as well. And that just doesn't make sense. And so when I first discovered Dramatica back in the mid-90s, everything that I saw was amazing. Like, there were no caveats, no exceptions. I mean, it was basically main character growth that sold me on the whole theory. Because, you know, it wasn't just this kind of abstract idea of growth. It was defined, either stopping something or starting something. I thought that was amazing. I thought it was magical. But this audience appreciation of essence, I just felt like it was just so wrong. It just seemed, the definitions seem off. You know, the definition of positive feel says when a main character's approach is deemed proper, the audience hopes for him to remain steadfast in that approach and to succeed. Regardless of whether he actually succeeds or fails, if he remains steadfast, he wins a moral victory, and the audience feels the story is positive. When the approach is deemed improper, the audience hopes for him to change. Whether or not the main character succeeds, if he changes from an improper approach to a proper one, he also wins a moral victory, and the story feels positive. That, to me, sounds like main character resolve and story judgment, not main character growth, because you're talking about their approach. And so it just that didn't feel right for the longest time, and I just figured, okay, well, this is where the error in Dramatica is, or this is where the exception is, and I'll just ignore it because really, it's the audience appreciation and whatever they feel like, I care less. I'm just going to write stories that actually work, and however it turns out, you know, that's how it turns out. Well, that was how I felt up until today when I actually started to write this week's article, and I was really excited because what I wanted to do was to kind of find a way to show how Dramatica once again was able to predict something. You know, there are 320 different analyses on the site, and I can go through and check to see how many are a positive feeling and how many are a negative feeling. And I was sure, just like last week, when I'd find some really great evidence of how, well, once again, Dramatica predicts, you know, it would make sense you'd want more upper films, more positive feeling films, and there are probably less negative feeling films just because of human nature. But it turns out it's split 50-50, right down the middle. Although, actually, the negative feeling films outweigh the positive feeling films. It's 160 to 150. And so that completely destroyed the point of my article, and I was really frustrated because I'd spent a really long time writing these 200,000-word articles, and I was ready to publish, get all my great screenshots, and basically the research didn't pan out. So I looked into it further, and I just thought maybe Chris and Melanie, which I don't like to say, maybe they made a mistake in naming those semantic values after essence. Maybe they made a mistake with positive and negative. And I just think it's misleading terminology. I mean, looking into the definition for essence, you get when a main character stops doing something bad, that is positive. When a main character starts doing something good, that also is positive. However, when a main character starts doing something bad or stops doing something good, these are negative. Okay, so that means Luke Skywalker is stopping something good, and that feels negative, and Leonard Shelby in Memento is stopping something bad, and that is somehow positive. That doesn't make any sense at all. That just doesn't feel right. Positive and negative, I know what they're getting at, which I'll get to in a second, but to anybody else reading positive feel and negative feel, they just get confused. And that's why somebody even wrote in a question on the main site, question and answer, is negative feeling merely descriptive or is it instrumental? And Chris cleared it up, and it's something that's actually buried in one of the other definitions. A positive story is one where the characters are doggedly pursuing a solution to their troubles. They seem to be in control. A negative story is one in which the problem is dogging the characters as they attempt to escape its effects. They seem to be at the mercy of the problem. Now that makes perfect sense. So that's where that positive and negative feeling comes from. So yeah, totally. Leonard feels like he is doggedly pursuing a solution. It's not that it's a positive thing that he's doing, but it seems like it's manageable and he can do it. As opposed to Luke in Star Wars, where it seems like, you know, everybody's coming in around them and dogging them and they're trying to escape the effects of the problem. That feels completely right. So what that means is it means positive feel and negative feel are insufficient semantic terms to describe what's really going on in the dramatic tension of a story. If essence is really about the feeling of dramatic tension in the story, then what it should be is overwhelming or surmountable. So instead of negative feeling stories, you have overwhelming stories. And instead of positive feeling stories, you have surmountable stories, which I think is what they meant by essence. This is the thing you have to understand. In the main character growth describes the transitory state of the main character's development throughout the story. And what you have to remember is that story form has time built into it. So it may seem like it's just these static plot points that this is what happens, but it actually shows the progress of time, and it's able to transmute time into space and space into time. Both of those things exist at the same time because you're looking at a model of the human mind trying to process through a problem, trying to work through the justification process. So that feeling of that growth is throughout the entire thing. It's not just at the end of the story, like that previous definition. It's actually the kind of, if you take a snapshot of the feeling of the entire mind all at once, you would get the growth. And also the same thing with the story judgment. You look at the story judgment, it's not just at the end of the film, like, oh, that's a good thing. Oh, that was a bad thing. It's actually that the emotional state of mind throughout that permeates the entire narrative is like all good or is it all bad? You know, like the balance of it all. Obviously, there'll be ups and downs, but the overall feeling of it, it's either that mind is in a good state or it's in a bad state. And you put those two together, those two transitory states, and they either work together to create something that's overwhelming or they work together and create something that has that feeling of something that's surmountable. That's something that's manageable, that you can handle. So for instance, so with that in mind, then I went back into the analyses and looked at them, and it made complete sense. So if you take the instance of feeling of overwhelming in stories that are marked with a growth of stop and a judgment of good, you'll get films like Eastern Promises and Looper and Rocky. Don't get more overwhelming than a story about dealing with the Russian mob, or a story about assassins from the future coming back to kill you, or a story about fighting in a boxing match you have absolutely no chance of winning. Those are really overwhelming stories. The tension in there feels overwhelming. Same thing with Midnight Cowboy. Joe and Ratso don't exactly find New York a very hospitable place, right? It's kind of an overwhelming situation. And then if you look at the other side, growth of start and judgment of bad, so start bad stories, you get a film like Eve's Bayou, which you might not have seen. It's an independent film from the late 90s. You don't get more overwhelming than growing up in a Creole American fractured family in Louisiana. It's kind of depressing. It's very overwhelming. Or look at Witness. You don't get more overwhelming than hiding out from crooked cops in Amish Pennsylvania. It just seems like everything's going to cave in at any moment. Or again, running from a cyborg killer from the future. Apparently, it's very overwhelming, the future coming back to kill you. That's in The Terminator. Or even more at home, being a really grotesquely unattractive seventh grader in suburban New Jersey in Welcome to the Dollhouse. You know, all these stories are overwhelming stories. The dramatic tension feels overwhelming. It's not that it feels negative, because some of these turn out well. It's just, it feels overwhelming. the tension of that is an overwhelming thing. On the other side, we have surmountable obstacles, which are things that the characters can actually pursue solutions because the conflict seems disputable and just seems tenuous. Like, well, I can get over this. It's no problem. Looking at main character start stories in a story judgment of good stories, so start good, you get examples of films like Being John Malkovich, As Good As It Gets with Jack Nicholson, and City Slickers. So those aren't films that overwhelm characters with insurmountable odds. I mean, that's pretty manageable. You know, living inside Malkovich's head, dealing with OCD, they can be difficult, but the way they're presenting these films, it's something that's tenuous. It's something that they could actually get over. It's manageable. Disrupting a wedding, introducing yourself into the workplace, that's no problem for the women in My Best Friend's Wedding or Working Girl. That's perfectly acceptable. Surmountable tension is manageable tension. And you can see that in Stop Bad Stories as well. Grave of the Fireflies, which is a Japanese animated film. If you haven't seen it, it's a great film, but man, it's depressing. I mean, I wouldn't exactly call that a positive feeling film, but, you know, regardless of what the two kids in it face, Setsuko and Seita, whatever they face, they still manage to overcome it all, and you never feel like they won't be able to get through it. I mean, they go through some pretty harrowing stuff, but it never once feels overwhelming. And it's crazy that that's just because of the way that the main character grows through the story and the overall story judgment of the narrative. You put those two together and you can tell whether or not a story is surmountable or if it's overwhelming. And the same thing with The Treasure of Sierra Madre or Brokeback Mountain. Of course, being gay in a hostile world is difficult, but it's not impossible. Prospecting for gold isn't exactly the easiest job in the remote Sierra Madre Mountains, but Bogart's able to do it. And then, of course, standing up to the Joker in The Dark Knight or mobsters in A History of Violence, that's also manageable. So Mortensen, you know, Viggo, in Eastern Promises, it's overwhelming. I mean, it's just like you just feel the weight of conflict just moving in on him. But with History of Violence, it seems like it's a manageable task. It's surmountable. I can actually get over this. And that's the feeling of tension. It's great because those are two different films, the same actor, and he's experiencing two different feelings of dramatic tension in there. So that's really all I wanted to get across in this week's podcast, is the idea that it would be great if somewhere down the road we could be able to change those terms and possibly make it a little more understandable, a little easier to appreciate for people coming to Dramatica, because it can be confusing, just like it is with Change Steadfast, where it's like, well, every main character changes. When it comes to something like positive feeling and negative feeling, when you see Star Wars listed as a negative feeling, or The Matrix as a negative feeling, it's like, that doesn't feel right. There must be something wrong with this theory. But what they really meant is that Star Wars and The Matrix are overwhelming. Now, sure, of course The Matrix is overwhelming. It feels like any second now it's all going to cave in on them and they're all going to be turned back into batteries. But, you know, labeling them as negative is just distracting, and it kind of disrupts the conversation, and there's no progress being made in making better stories, which is all that really matters, is making better narrative and clearer, more meaningful films for people to watch. That's what Dramatica is actually able to help out with. And so by clarifying these terms and making them more accurate and sufficient for the task at hand, will make it easier for people to understand the theory and apply it to their own stories. I also would like to take time out to talk about the Dramatica Mentorship Program. As you can see on the site, you know, we call it Story Structure for Professional Writers. And if you are a professional writer, you know what it's like facing that deadline. You may have been working on a story forever, and, you know, the deadline's looming, you have all these notes to address, and it can seem like, oh, how am I ever going to be able to do this? And, you know, the key is Dramatica. It really is. And the sooner you understand it and apply it to your stories, the quicker you will be able to finish those stories and get to a place where you never experience writer's block again. It's impossible to experience writer's block if you have Dramatica, because there's always something that you can fix and always something you can work on. If you're just going to sit there and stare at a blank screen the whole time and wait for your muse to come down and grant you the magical ability to start writing, that's one approach, but to me it doesn't seem very productive, especially when it comes to somebody who does this for a living. And so what we've done with all the writers, producers, and directors we've worked with is we sat down with them and taught them the concepts of Dramatica and how to use that in their own stories. And the Dramatica Mentorship Program is specifically designed to help you learn the concepts of Dramatica and, you know, in a step-by-step process and understand, you know, the entire Dramatica model by watching films that are similar and checking them and going over the different analyses. And, you know, it's like doing homework and putting in the time and effort to do that. And one of our conditions is you have to really be serious about it. You can't just do it lightly. Just do it every now and then. You have to actually apply yourself to it. And if you do that, you know, you'll get to a place where you won't have any problem working through the stories that you're trying to write. So if you want to learn more about that, you can go to narrativefirst.com/mentor and read all about it. I have a brand new letter that I put up there kind of describing the different things that have gone on over the last 2 years in developing this program and getting it out to writers. Well, that's it for this week. I hope you had a great one. Next week, we'll be continuing our discussion of audience appreciations, moving on to the last two. If you are interested in the Dramatica Mentorship Program, please visit narrativefirst.com/mentor. If you'd like to leave a voicemail so you can appear on the show, just visit narrativefirst.com/podcast, and you'll see a button there on the right side of the screen. Just go ahead and leave your message, and we will get you on the air. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.